How's it going?
Good.
Okay. We have a question here that maybe we go through first real quick. I don't know. Do you want to go? What do you do?
I know we have a few other questions too, but I don't think we have them here. So we'll look at those later. Let's see. This one says, in the morning chant, it says, association with the disliked is dukkha. Don't understand this disliked. Seemed like a judgment from the self. I understand the following line, separation from the light is dukkha. Thanks. And this is just really in a very practical, mundane sense, you know, when we have to be with what we don't like, there's dukkha. You have to remember that dukkha is a whole range from real suffering, you know, agony, to discomfort, feeling dissatisfied, or even just that little feeling of this isn't the way I want it, this is uncomfortable, this is unsatisfying. So we don't like being subjected to the things we don't like. And we don't like being separated from the things we like. As far as the judgment part goes, it's a little more, obviously noticing what we like and what we don't like and why helps us to understand what we're clinging to, what we have aversion to, and what we have desire for. And one of the things that's useful to watch for is when you're meditating and you really don't have any of those feelings. There's nothing you want and there's nothing you want to get rid of. So in that kind of state of mind, then you have a better chance of wisdom arising.
Yeah, and in that vein, we're going to talk about something that some of you like and some of you dislike, and is death. We had a lot of discussions, a couple of groups about it, and it's one of my favorite topics too. So, yeah, I'm going to go for it. So when my father was 40, he died in his sleep one night, and as far as we knew, he wasn't really very ill. He was having some chest pains. He went to the doctor. The doctor kind of said, oh, you just have a cold. Don't worry about it. And he sent him home, basically. And then like a week or two later, he just didn't wake up in the morning. And I know my sister and I both have weird heart things. And my mom has high blood pressure, so I do too. And it's just, you never really know when it's your turn. And sometimes I, when we're talking to people who are having a health scare themselves, and they're in their 60s or 70s or 80s, and they'll be like, oh, you don't have to worry yet, you're so young, it doesn't, you know, you don't have to worry like I do. And then I'll tell them the story about my dad, and then after telling it to them and saying, like, you never know, I might just have a couple years, I might not live as long as he did, I might, you know, I may outlive him, I hope. But, and then they'll still say, yeah, but you're so young, you don't have to worry. And I'm like, okay. Story didn't do anything for them. And I think a lot of people live their lives from that place of, like, it's not time yet. It's later, it's sometime in the future. And there's this book we read called Being Mortal by Atul Gawande. He's a surgeon. He's a surgeon. And he writes articles for the New Yorker, I think. And he's a really good writer if you're interested. It's a good book. But he said in over like 200 people he interviewed about this, he said that people with terminal illnesses never really expect to die on the day that it actually happens. They always think it's in the future still, even though it's like the doctors are telling them, yeah, you know, it's time to be getting ready, talking to your family, and, you know, they're on hospice and they're feeling terrible, but they never think today's the day. So I think it's good if we kind of look at what if today's the day. And I like the idea of waking up with a thought like, how do I make this a good day to die? And the Buddha was really into death reflection, as most of you probably know. And I really like the Maranasati Sutta. It's in Anguttara 6:20. And so it's the mindfulness of death, Maranasati Sutta. And it starts off with, says, monks, mindfulness of death, when developed and pursued, is of great fruit and great benefit. It gains a footing in the deathless, has the deathless as its final end. And how is mindfulness of death developed and pursued so that it is of great fruit and great benefit, gains a footing in the deathless, and has the deathless as its final end? There is the case where a monk, as day departs and night returns, reflects, many are the possible causes of my death. A snake might bite me. A scorpion might sting me. A centipede might bite me. That would be my death. That would be how my death would come about. That would be an obstruction for me. Stumbling, I might fall. My food, digested, might trouble me. My bile might be provoked. My phlegm might be provoked. Piercing wind forces in the body might be provoked. That would be how my death would come about. That would be an obstruction for me. Then the monk should investigate. Are there any evil and skillful mental qualities unabandoned by me that would be an obstruction for me were I to die in the night? And so it kind of goes on through mental, verbal, and bodily qualities and actions. And if you don't have anything unwholesome, you don't have to worry. You can live at peace, like right now. And you also don't have to worry about your death. So I kind of take that as a, like, you wake up in the morning and you go, oh, okay, how am I going to make this a good day to die? And everyone here, I'm sure is kind of aware of this line of thinking, like Sila Samadhi Panya style kind of topics. So, like living from a place of dana, like making everything you do a gift, like I was saying the other day. Even if it's just metta or one of the other Brahma Viharas, like looking at people with those kind eyes, and that can be an act of giving. And just a general attitude, being helpful to others. And, you know, like my mom really loves her flower garden. She's really into like all the composting and the feeding and watering and weeding and stuff. And she loves to pick the flowers for her shrine and offer it to the Buddha. And she likes to have it for her neighbors too. So I think she gets so much joy out of this. And I have a feeling just that is enough to make her die happy. Like, she really loves her flowers. Yeah. And so, you know, dana is a good place to make sure you do something nice for someone every day. I kind of like to think of even just answering emails sweetly to people. We email so many people all the time. It's like, how can I make this a gift? How can I make this something someone's going to, it's going to brighten their day? Yeah. And then sila, of course. So, yeah, we love the suttas. So there's like the 10 wholesome and unwholesome actions, and they call it the Kammapatta. And you see it in a lot of places in the suttas, but we don't generally hear it that much for some reason in Dhamma talks. And I don't know like why it's not more emphasized, because it's nice and simple and clear. And it's a nice expansion for the not just the 5 precepts, but a little extra. So it goes over the bodily acts, like not killing, not stealing, not committing adultery or other sexual misconduct. And then the speech gets expanded into not having false speech, not having divisive speech, not having offensive or harsh speech, and not gossiping or having frivolous, useless speech. So it's not, it's kind of partly the list for right speech, but a little bit different. And then it's, the last set is like the mental acts. So avoiding covetousness, abandoning covetousness, and maybe switching it out for mudita.
Okay.
and then instead of ill will, having metta, and instead of having wrong view, having right view. And yeah, I mean, this is, I really like this. I'm on this like rebirth control kick now because I like the idea. So the Buddha says that, you know, in this sutta where he's talking about the wholesome and unwholesome acts, he says, if you live through these places, through this place, with these actions, then you have the opportunity to choose where you go after you die, which heaven realm you'd like. If you have enough of this, the right actions involved, mental, bodily, and speech. So this is kind of nice. This is how you get to choose where you go after death. And someone in the group brought up today about like not wanting to choose, but allowing whatever best to happen after death, for like whatever destination you have, to be the best one for you to practice. And I really like that idea too. I think the Buddha would approve. Go where you're going to make the most practice, instead of hanging out somewhere that's just really nice in some heaven realm somewhere. So just kind of being open to that idea, but knowing that if you're good and you kind of set your sights on it, you could. It's kind of encouraging. Yeah. And then I like to think of like making sure I do some kind of Dhamma activity every day. If it's like listening to a Dhamma talk, or just making sure I get meditation in every day on a regular basis. And yeah, talking to people about Dhamma is good. Talking to friends, talking to teachers, and coming to study groups or whatever it is, just making sure you get some kind of like Dhamma contemplation happening that day. And, or just sitting by yourself and reflecting on it. It's a nice general kind of mindfulness practices as you go about your day. Like, yeah, you know this stuff, just washing dishes mindfully, or watching your speech. Am I speaking gently or kindly? And watching your moods and emotions, kind of, yeah, just general mindfulness. And I like to use Hiri Otapa as a guide. Are you familiar with the term at all? Yeah. Mostly? Okay, no. Okay, so it gets translated as moral shame and moral dread a lot of the time, but that sounds kind of scary to me. Yeah, I get that look on my face too. I'm like, ooh. So I kind of like to think of it as like having a conscience and really understanding karma, like cause and effect. Like if I do this thing, the results are probably going to be not good. And so it's that kind of restraint you have. Yeah, and kind of using that as a guide and reflecting like before, during, and after I do something. It's helpful. It's like, is it what I'm doing like a good thing? Is it right? And is this in accordance with Dhamma? Like, it mostly comes into play around other people in a relationship. So just kind of reflecting on that when you go to bed, like, did I do anything during the day that I would want to change? Like, did I do my best to make this a good day to die? Or what area needs improvement? And that's like if I have a tomorrow, because you never know. And so it's a good kind of some wake or practice, a good stimulation for urgency. And then I was thinking about the putting down your burdens topic we've been playing with, and thinking about what kinds of things I carry around myself. And it's like, we have a lot of projects going on, building projects at the monastery, this, you know, teaching coming up, or that person's coming over and they're going to need some counseling with their, you know, relationships or whatever it is. And it's like, do I really want to be like carrying that around and holding on to that? Or when I go to bed at night, can I put everything down and not have that pressure? Or how do I make it not pressure? How do I hold things more lightly? And people in our lives are a big deal. Like, I'm sure if you have children, it's hard not to be really attached, but like, how tightly you cling knowing that they're gonna die too, and they might go before you do. It kind of puts an extra, another place for mindfulness for you when you're thinking about their problems and you wanting to protect them. So, I don't have children, so you can tell me later if this isn't so. But, yeah. And we've also been talking in groups, playing with this idea of like getting out of the abusive relationships we have with ourselves. Going along with this beating ourselves up and feeling guilty about things that we can't change. Or, yeah, it's good to use that AFL method on, acknowledge, forgive, and learn method on instead. Because it's not really benefiting anybody else, especially ourselves, but anybody else around us. People who love us don't want to hear all this, you beating yourself up either. So it's kind of a kindness for them. And then you think about it at night, like, can you say something kind to yourself instead? Something encouraging. And I think about when my mom is late, she's getting older, she's in her 70s too, and I do feel like a sense of responsibility. I think a lot of us, I don't know, this, some of us, our parents are still alive, and when we think about all of the good things they've done for us and having metta for them so that when we take care of them, it can be a beautiful thing no matter what else has happened between us in the past. And then we can look back at that with joy for ourselves, knowing we did the best we could coming from that place. So when our own death comes, we don't have to worry about it. And then this also came up too, it's like being clear about our priorities, especially when it comes to the Dhamma, like what, just being reflective in our lives, what do we want to put ahead of the Dhamma, or at least Dhamma practice. Integration is the best, of course, but sometimes some things feel more immediate. And then how do you integrate the Dhamma into that and make sure that it really does become the top priority for you in whatever way that, however that shows up. So, and the topic of safety also came up, and it's like, all of this is protection, and it does provide the real kind of safety for this life and the next. Just making sure that your sila is clean, making sure, you know, the stuff we already discussed, maybe I won't go over again, but, so, yeah, just not looking for safety out in the world where it can't be provided, but just looking to understanding your own suffering and trying to work with Dhamma to, yeah, break through, because, it's going to happen to all of us, but like the joke I said earlier today, like, it's perfectly safe to die. You've done it a million times before. Mm-hmm. And if you're into rebirth, which it really does change the whole topic of death if you're not. So it really does, like, the sense of urgency for practice is much stronger, and the goal of enlightenment is so much clearer when you take into consideration that this does just keep going after death, on and on, until you really understand and get rid of all of the greed, hatred, and delusion. And it's kind of a nice practice the Sri Lankans have. I'm sure some of you have heard about this before, but the Sri Lankans, when a child is born, they have a little like dana or merit book that they start for them, and it's the family writes in all of the good things that they've done over the years, starting from childhood. And at the end of their lives, when they're dying, they read out this book to them, so that their minds are, you know, happy that they've done all these good things. And I think it's really sweet, and it may be hard for us to do for ourselves, like, again, with the beating ourselves up thing. So sometimes I think it might be good to do it for someone you love, like your parent or a sibling or a friend, whoever you know who's like starting to go down the hospice track, maybe, or something, getting closer to the end. Or start early is good too, but like writing down things that they've done, or things you're grateful for that they've done for you, or yeah, same kind of thing, just their good qualities, and reading that to them well before maybe death, so that they can reflect on it and hear it. Tomorrow, I think we're going to do dying practice for the meditation period. So you may or may not want to lay out a little extra cushion, because it's better lying down. Chances are good when we go, you know. Hopefully we're comfortably laying down someplace. Yeah. I know you wanted to say some things before. She forgot.
I did. I wanted to say some things about this.
You don't know. Never mind. Okay. Yeah. I don't know. That's pretty much all I had to say for now. You know me. Not the talker.
Sometimes I don't know if she's reading my mind or if she's putting thoughts into it. What am I supposed to say? But as you were talking,
what? Go ahead. I remember what it was, but go ahead.
No, say it first.
No, go ahead.
Okay. While you were talking, I was thinking about that. The tendency we have as human beings to push death away, like you were talking about. And I don't know if everyone here has had that situation where something happens, someone gets in a bad accident in your life, or someone's dying or dies, and suddenly our priorities are really different. And I think this idea that you're presenting about being prepared to die, I mean, the Buddha said, you know, in the next breath, be prepared for that, that it really helps us get our priorities straight. But, and you said that, but I'm wondering, like, what do you do to clarify your priorities, to really, really make that feel immediate, that I really want to do what's important today. And one of the things that I know is a common standard encouragement when people are getting close to death is to make sure you settled everything that you can settle in your relationships. Tell people you love them, forgive them. So one of the things I've been thinking about for years and keeping clean is relationships with people, so that I could just run into anybody on the street and not feel bad in any way. You know, like really be all right with everybody. I think that's helpful.
That was the thing that I was thinking
about. That was the thing. See, I don't know if you're putting this... Yeah. So if there's anyone that things aren't settled with, consider how to settle it. And one thing that sometimes people come and say is, well, I can't settle this with my dad, he's passed away, or whomever. And I said, but you don't need them to settle it. You can settle it inside. And who knows, I have a feeling we're not all as separate as we think. And I think when our heart changes around something, I mean, sometimes, as you well know, situations in life are so horrific, it's really hard to settle it. But if we want to be free, we have to. We have to find a way to come to peace with whatever is happened in the past. And I know I have this very strong sense, and I guess I have some evidence that it makes me feel certain about this, that when our heart changes, it does have an effect on others. Especially when they put ideas in your head or reach your head.